Hey, everybody, and welcome back to the show. I'm your host, as always, Ben Thomas. You know, the cool thing about our world is we make technology and test things out and get to develop some of the capabilities is that those technologies go into use cases that we don't always get to see the end result of. And one of those I had a chance to see in action at a show called ITSEC. It's a defense-minded, security training-minded show where really a lot of providers and DoD participants and things like that have the opportunity really to see what's next in training, to deploy technologies, to try new things. And I was fascinated by the conversation, said, you know what, this is a world I want to dig in deeper to and see how our world of technology helps supplement and support that industry specifically. So brought on a guest today. We're going to call him by his call sign. We're going to say Slam Duncan, Director of Business Development for Next Gen Test and Training Systems over at CAE. Slam/Chris Duncan. Great to have you on the show, sir.
Yeah, Ben. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, I'll tell you what. We'll start with kind of an easy softball question, especially for a lot of us that are tech-minded listening to the show right now. You know, I think people don't quite realize when you talk about training and simulation, especially when it comes to things like the battlefield or real-world testing, how close that simulated environment is to the real world. And technology is a large reason for that. But I want to ask kind of at the starting point, how close are we and why is it so important that we actually make those worlds so similar?
Yeah, you bet. How close are we? That's a hard one to measure. But every day we're getting closer and closer as technology advances. It enables more applications and tools that get us closer to the real world environment. It's never going to be perfect. It's still going to be simulation, so there will always be error. But you know, we feel like we're getting pretty close. And you know, just recently, you know, looking at the DoD joint simulation environment, they actually did their testing in the simulator. So they've got the F-35 testing fully compliant and IoT&E complete within joint simulation environment. That's a pretty outstanding milestone for modeling and simulation. As far as why it matters, man, that's a good one. So, training in the simulated world is very much like taking a sports team and training a sports team for an event. And you know, you've got blocking and tackling drills that you need to accomplish. We call that part task training, but you've also got scrimmages, and you know, scrimmages could be taken on. You know, maybe the practice squad, or it could be taking on another full, fully resourced team. So you've got different degrees of fidelity of the level of training. And why it's so important is that these operators need to see what kind of complex scenarios they're going to be facing when the actual conflict happens, so that they're ready to make those decisions and they've seen it before. It's essentially, we want it to become muscle memory as far as cognitive capability so that they've seen these problems, they understand the situations, and they're able to make these decisions more effectively for combat-related scenarios. I think it's a force enabler, and quite honestly, it can be a deterrent. If you know that your force is better trained because they've actually practiced this in a simulated environment that has the highest degree of realism, then that can be a force deterrent for whatever adversary is out there that thinks that they can contest our capabilities.
Well, Slam, it's interesting. I especially coming out of ITSEC, my first time to actually go to the show was a couple weeks ago. And I think naturally in my mind, and I know a lot of people are kind of in this same boat, when you think about training and simulation, it's, oh, you know, Microsoft Flight Simulator. That's what I grew up with. That's what I was familiar with. And you think that that's sort of the use case. And hey, you know, we'll put some people in some seats and they'll, you know, adjust some joysticks. But the reality is dramatically different. We're talking about holistic immersive environments. And I'm not talking just AR, VR headsets. I'm talking about built-in domes with gun and training simulation, firing simulations, all these different things. The world is so advanced now, it's kind of unbelievable. But I want to ask, you know, especially even coming from a layperson like myself, what are some of those technical advancements that really have driven the industry of simulation forward?
Yeah, so, you know, first of all, Microsoft Flight Simulators, that's a wonderful simulation and one that I grew up on as well. and still play even to this day. A lot of value in, you know, a gaming application. You get a lot of real world practicing. We call it reps and sets, right? You get repetition over many sets, kind of like working out. But as far as technological advancements that have been coming along, I mean, I think that you've seen the rise in the performance and some of the compute capacity and GPUs. So you're getting a better quality graphic as well as higher kind of more complex algorithms, able to calculate line of sight more quickly and with more fidelity. You've got your sensor applications that have been coming along very nicely with GPU support. But also the algorithms have become more complex themselves. So the software is becoming more complex and allowing more relationships to be developed inside the simulation. And then, you know, in the case of, say, joint simulation environment, you've got actual aircraft weapon systems operational flight program being hosted inside of a simulator, which is pretty outstanding for the F-35. We do that as well on the F-16 here within CAE. And, you know, the more realistic environment that you can provide, the better. What enables that is the GPU advancements, the software advancements. It's critical that you get the right engineering capacity and quality. And we've also got a motive or an initiative building momentum to get on the same standards. And that's one thing that CAE has been leading, as well as our SCARS program, is getting everybody on the same architecture and standards in order to enable what we call a fair fight. And that fair fight is not, I'm going to limit my forces or capabilities just so I can make it fair for you. That's definitely not what we're in the business of doing. Fair fight refers to more of the data that's available. So the data is available to both sides, blue and red, and to everybody in the simulation so that you can process that data the way that you need to based on your capabilities. And so we feel like those are some pretty rock solid technological advancements that are happening on the M&S side.
You even talk about the idea of compute power continuing to go up. You also see connectivity speeds going up. You know, one of the larger conversations that I heard at the show was this idea of really finally embracing decentralized training. Now you can have multi-simulated environments in different places, whether that's here in Texas like we are, you could run the same sim at the same time with somebody in Florida or in Dubai. You know, some of those connectivity upgrades have also helped support the industry grow as well. How important and impactful is something like decentralized training, you know, now that we really are at the speeds and in the connectivity speeds where you can embrace a lot of those different technologies actually in real time?
Yeah, so decentralized training really enables quite a bit as far as getting more of your part task training, blocking and tackling capabilities with other weapons platforms and other participants. So you lose a little bit of fidelity sometimes in the long distance travel or long haul information passage. But that's okay as long as you have the right expectations and the right training milestones that you're trying to achieve. And there is the value of getting everyone on the same battlefield, even if you lose some of that fidelity, is invaluable because otherwise you're trying to pull everybody from their schedules and their local training or their local whatever limitations, trying to pull them into a single space, and that doesn't often work out. So red flag as a prime example, it only happens 3 or 4 times a year because it's so complex to be able to do that. Well, we can operate a distributed mission multiple times a day. You're increasing that awareness with other operators and forming the trust and also exposing them to some of your capabilities of your platform.
Decentralized training or, you know, GPU increases. One of the natural next questions is, okay, now that we have the computer, the connectivity power, how does AI start to play a role in that, right? And I feel like that's a question I have to ask on every single show that I do. But when you talk about from a training perspective and you think about AI, you know, what are the practical use cases? Are we talking about randomization of simulations? Are we talking about, Comrade simulation. What are the best use cases? What are some of the practical ways that you've seen AI be deployed in the training and sim side of things?
Yeah. This AI is exciting. Let me caveat this with, I am definitely not an AI expert, but I can dream just like everybody, right? And so we have not seen a whole lot of AI, like true AI integration in the M&S world yet. There's still a lot of opportunity. Where I'm excited to see it enter the space, at least initially, is after the simulation is done, post-mission analysis. So let's get AI crunching on a lot of those complex problems that take a lot of time to look at. And let's look at that post-mission analysis and see what they come up with, both from a kind of an operator performance based perspective, as well as more of the larger scale operational decision-making perspective, you know, and I want to see some of the outcomes that AI's ability to produce out of that, as well as I think another one is pre-mission. So let's get AI tools involved with creating scenarios, maybe recreation of satellite imagery on some of our scenarios and targets. Let's get some of that stuff working so that we can turn these into a quicker scenario generation and mission rehearsal style timelines. I'm pretty excited about pre and post mission AI usage.
And you talk about sort of that training in that sim world, and now not only can you leverage things like real-time data or, you know, being able to track sensors or things like even just weather real-time, right? You can create those simulations based off randomizers and, you know, not only tracking some of that data, but interpreting it in a way that says, hey, this operator has a tendency to veer left when they're attacked from the center, right? There are small things that you could pick up maybe that you may not have been able to before. But I want to ask too, I know we sort of touched on sort of the connectivity side and the GPU and the CPU side of things. You know, I want to ask about, you know, that level of detail that you mentioned where you can recreate a scene, recreate a battlefield, and even use some of the real-time data and analytics to recreate weather environments or recreate, you know, certain, you know, even buildings that have just popped up. How important is it to leverage some of those real-time and currently updating technologies, especially as you talk about a battlefield, that those are always environments that are constantly changing?
Yeah, it's absolutely. So it provides an edge on your adversary that they may not have. So, you know, I think an everyday use case or example might be, let me go with a more of an example that people might relate to. So if you drive the same route to and from work and home every day, you put very little thought into that route other than just, you know, maybe dodging some traffic or whatever. But if it's the first time that you're driving that route, you may have your GPS guiding you. You may have looked at it before. You're going to plan out how much time it takes, all that kind of stuff. That's kind of the thought that goes into before you fly a mission. This is we call it chair fly, but this is the way you chair fly that route. And we're just talking about simple to and from navigation, right? When you go into the more complex scenarios, that just gets more complicated and there's a lot more variables involved. Well, seeing it beforehand, you know, you kind of get into like, oh, I've seen this before, so I don't have to think too much about it. This is the decision I'm going to make here. And now you can put more thought process and bandwidth into, if things go badly, this is where I need to be maybe dedicating resources to. If there's a traffic jam up ahead, I know that there's routes that I need to take around it. So that's really what the realism within modeling and simulation provides you.
One of the things uniquely that kind of stood out, it feels like it's a technology maybe that's been around for 10, 15 years, is that idea of AR and VR, or maybe some of that mixed reality, right? Where, hey, I could put that headset on, and obviously it's, I don't want to say it's a generation removed, because it's not, it's still a very practical technology, but how does that style of technology fit in with the more maybe immersive type environments where it seems like a lot of people are going these days?
Yeah, it's not clear yet. what exactly the impact is going to be. I can tell you what we hope for, and I think that ultimately technology will catch up and provide, is that you can reduce the simulator size by, you know, probably 2 or 3x by removing the domes and the screens and everything else. You have a very immersive environment and at a far cheaper cost, both for the product as well as for the support behind the product, which is power, cooling, compute power, you know, all of the things that support these technologies for the, as far as the infrastructure. So in the space of one kind of domed simulator, you might have two or three, and now you can generate a more realistic scenario in one facility, you know, based off of this enabling technology like MR, AR, XR. So pretty excited about what the future holds with this. And I think there are some use cases where it's already making a positive impact. I'm waiting to see kind of where this goes and the impact it's going to make on really the combat air forces of the United States Air Force and the Navy.
Yeah. Well, what's incredible to see too is obviously, look, everything that we do from a training and simulation standpoint, even all the way back to the technology development, is designed to drive outcomes in the field, right? Or preventative even outcomes in the field. You know, when you think about, you know, whether I'm a government organization or maybe I'm someone like Boeing, how do you really measure a lot of those things? You sort of mentioned it a second ago when we talked about AI, but how do you measure those outcomes and how do you sort of say, hey, it's important for us to try some of these new technologies because XYZ is happening in the field, or we've, you know, decreased training time by 25%. What are some of the things really that that end user, that end buyer says, man, this technology innovation is really, really impactful for me?
Yeah. So there are some very, very good objective analysis that we do here at CAE and metrics that we follow in order to grade new technologies and new products. But ultimately, the most effective is getting it in the hands of the operator as early as possible so that they can give you the honest feedback. And they can tell you whether or not this is something that needs to be pursued or not pursued. Will I use this in everyday training or will I not? And you know, maybe also give you some feedback on how to improve it, right? So so ultimately, yes, that we were very rigorous, very thorough with how we test stuff, but the ultimate tester is the warfighter and the operators on the other end, and we try very hard to enlist their support early on in the process. To determine the way forward.
Entire channel, but I can't let you leave without the shameless plug. You know, when you think about maybe the next 5-10 years of what excites you most being at CAE and what are some of the things, what some of the things are that people can expect, you know, what comes to mind? I don't want you to violate any NDAs, by the way, on this show, because I don't want to have to go back out and edit it, but what are some of the things that people can be excited for whenever they think about maybe the next 5-10 years of training and sim over at CAE?
Yeah. What excites me is, we're seeing a culture shift within the armed forces that modeling and simulation becomes more and more important over the years. And that's exciting for a company like CAE and for me to participate in it. The investments are going to increase because they see the benefits, they see the efficiencies, and honestly, they see the effectiveness that M&S is providing. And the future of our next generation platforms and some of our weapon systems are it's just too complex, too cumbersome to get them on a live range and to fully test or train with their capabilities. And the only way you're going to do that is in a simulator. So, you know, that is exciting to me because it means that modeling and simulation is going to be involved in ways that it has not been in the future going forward. And I'm excited to support that and to enable it.
Well, I'll tell you what, as somebody who gets to live more on the nuts and bolts side of the technology, it's always nice to see folks like you guys who really tweak that, deploy it, and really execute it for a lot of the people at the end of the line, because that is, in many cases, as important, if not more important, uses of the technology. So you get a giant thank you from me, and I know the entire IDSEC community, especially based off of how busy your booth was out at the show, I know at least appreciates that and wants to give you a thank you too. But Chris Slam Duncan, thanks so much for coming on the show. We got to find a way to have you back on.
Thanks, Ben. I appreciate it, and I'd love to. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. And thank you all for tuning in as well to this episode of the show. Check us out, like, and subscribe. We'll see you next time.